Well, I want to thank you very, very much for that introduction. And I also want to comment, you are very, very fortunate here that you have President Smart, who is committed to the School of Agriculture. I travel, I speak, I've had an opportunity to go to a lot of schools and universities, and it really is nice when you have someone at the top who recognizes the importance of this school. So I want to commend you. I also want to thank Dr. Elliott. He accompanied us on the Russia trip. He was an absolute pleasure to travel with. I don't think he would ever be the same after that trip. There were some things that he learned and some that he shouldn't probably have learned, but I think it scarred him for life. But he was an absolute pleasure to be with. And it was very evident from day one, his commitment to agriculture and to this school. So I want to thank you, because we need a lot more people in this country teaching our young people like you, Doctor. So thank you very much. And John Hagler back there introduced himself as my chauffeur. You all need to know that my chauffeur took me down to the Boot Hill yesterday. That 4-hour trip normally was 6.5 hours, and I think he all but killed me 5-6 times. So I'm still shaking from that trip, and I don't know that it's going to take me quite a while to recover. So thank God I've got a much better driver in Washington than I had here in Missouri. Now, something else you'll notice, there's a couple young ladies that are in blue jackets. Normally, I can stand up here and I can give you remarks and it doesn't bother me one bit. I was a former auctioneer. I've sold in front of thousands of people and things don't bother me. But anytime I go to a group like this and I see blue jackets in the audience, excuse the language, but it scares the hell out of me. The FFA just does an absolutely outstanding job of teaching our young people how to become public speakers. And it is very intimidating to stand up in front of people that are part of the FFA, especially your state officers. These people are trained to the nth degree. I make a mistake, they're going to pick it up that quick. So it is very intimidating to stand up here. But as I pointed out when I came in the door earlier today, I do have an awful lot of allies in this room, because I'm a former 4-H'er. And we outnumber them, I think, like 4-1 today. So all the 4-H'ers, I might need your help a little bit later on to take on the FFA. So thank you all. But I appreciate all of our young people being here. It's very important. In my remarks this afternoon, I'm going to focus, a lot of you have asked, in fact, those that I did the interviews, what I want to focus on today. I want to focus on two themes. But the first one that I want to concentrate on, I think, is one that is near and dear to all of you, or most of you in this room, and that is the Farm Bill. You know, on February 7th, we reached the one-year anniversary of the 2014 Farm Bill that was signed by President Obama. And it has been a very busy year for us at USDA to try to get this bill implemented and underway. The second thing I want to talk to you about is what's at stake for agriculture on the international trade front as we move into a new year and with a new Congress, while pursuing several really important trade opportunities. To celebrate the one-year anniversary of the 2014 Farm Bill, you'll be seeing a month-long effort by USDA to highlight the hundreds, and I do mean hundreds, of provisions that we've implemented in the past year. We're implementing a safety net for farm families. We're expanding market opportunities both domestically and internationally. We're targeting our conservation efforts in forest fields and waters. We're keeping agricultural research as strong as we possibly can. We're supporting our returning vets, beginning farmers, and those that are underserved. We're investing in rural businesses and infrastructure, as well as home ownership. Keeping implementation on time and on schedule, ladies and gentlemen, is not due to luck. I'll give Secretary Vilsack a great deal of credit. He had a plan in mind. He had a vision. He had a process. We've worked in teams. We've assembled all different types of information. We've provided recommendations, timelines, the implementations, the education, and the outreach to the secretary. Don't anyone think for one minute that he was not personally involved in all of those things that I just mentioned to you, because he wanted to know each and every one of those. But it's also because of a great deal of hard work by thousands, and I mean thousands of skilled USDA employees working around this great nation. In fact, recently the American Farm Bureau Federation said that this administration has done a better job of implementing the Farm Bill than any other of the 7 Farm Bills. We are extremely proud of that compliment, but make no mistake about it, we are not done. We've committed to be worthy of the confidence that they have bestowed on us in the coming months. Last February, as many of you know, our first priority was to restart the Livestock Disaster Assistance Program. The President asked the Secretary, what do we need to do first? And that was our priority at USDA. And then the President, just a couple weeks after signing the Farm Bill, announced that our priority would in fact be the starting of the livestock disaster programs. After those weather disasters like 2012, and I was out here in 2012 visiting this state when you were going through a horrific drought, and I visited most of the states that year. And I also visited South Dakota after the Atlas blizzard hit. Our producers waited nearly 3 years, 3 long years, to get help from the Farm Bill. We restarted those programs in 60 days, 80% faster than the bill and than those programs were started after the signing of the 2008 Farm Bill. And we began issuing financial relief to those producers before the end of April. In fact, I went back to South Dakota on the 15th of April to announce the start of the sign-up and see some of those ranchers who'd lost thousands of their livestock come into our office and start signing up for those programs. We've almost addressed a 3-year backlog in a single year, issuing more than $4.7 billion in relief to more than 540,000 applicants so that their livestock operations could recover and continue. In May, we awarded $6 million to universities to build web tools to educate producers on the new Farm Bill safety net programs. In June, we restarted the continuous enrollments for the Conservation Program, or CRP, and currently 6.1 million acres are enrolled in continuous authority. 522,000 were enrolled in last year's continuous authority, and in 2015, 37,000 acres have currently been enrolled. We allow producers with CRP contracts expiring last September to extend their contracts for an additional year. We announced $8 million in CRP funds for Michigan, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin for honeybee habitat. And we desperately need to protect our pollinators. In fact, this is such a priority that now we have a pollinators task force at the Department of Agriculture, and the Secretary asked our Deputy Secretary, Krista Hardin, to lead that task force. Now, if you think that this is a problem just here in the United States, think again. Because when I was in China, I was standing next to Minister Ritz at a function for the ministers of the APEC countries, and the minister said, "Do you have problems with your honeybees?" And I said, "Yes, and we've created a task force." He said, "Could we partner with that? Because we have serious problems in Canada." We've gotten the same request from our neighbors down in the south. So this is a very important, and especially when you look at the fruits and vegetables that are grown across the the United States and in most of our states, this is an issue that we desperately need to address. We restarted an offshoot of CRP program that helps retiring farmers move their land to beginning farmers to start farming. And under the 2008 Farm Bill, 1,600 contracts were enrolled for a total of 261,000 acres. We restarted the Biomass Crop Assistance Program to grow and harvest non-food, non-feed crops for energy, reducing fires in our national forests by using dead and diseased wood to generate electricity. This summer, 19 energy facilities in 10 states participated in our program. And what that did, it helped our Forest Service meet or exceed its restoration goals for fiscal year 2014, including reducing hazardous fuels on 1.7 million acres of our forest land. In August, we implemented new safety programs for dairy called the Margin Protection, and I heard that we have some dairy producers here in the audience today. I hope you signed up for the Margin Protection program. In 3 months, we enrolled nearly half of the dairy producers here in the United States. And one of the reasons that we had such the participation, we had over 500 public meetings, we sent out over 60,000 direct mailings, and we conducted more than 400 demonstrations on our web-based tools. Late last year, we launched a new and improved non-insurance crop assistance program or NAP for specialty crops that can't get regular crop insurance. This is one of the things that I heard when I toured the disaster states in 2012. Time and time again, I heard, you know, that NAP program is not worth the paper that it's written on. You need to change it. And change it we did. Previously, the program covered that 55% of the market price and 50% of your loss. We've changed that. Producers can now choose higher coverage levels up to 65% of their expected production at 100% of their average market price. So that's a major change to the program. Again, we listened to what the producers asked for, Congress listened to what our producers asked for, and we made some meaningful changes. In September, we launched the Agriculture Risk Coverage and Price Loss Coverage Programs. So far, there have been more than 3,500 outreach events nationwide on ARC and PLC, sponsored not just by USDA, but also by Cooperative Extension and our states and some other state organizations. Right here in Missouri so far, we've had 490 events, outreach events. In August, we sent out letters to all of our producers so that they could analyze their crop production history. We launched the web tool, and you have until February 27th to sign up for the ARC and PLC programs. Or no, I'm sorry, you have until February 27th to change your basis and your yields. You have until March 31st to sign up for the ARC and PLC programs. If you're a grain farmer, remember, don't forget those two dates because they are extremely important for your farming operation. And let me take that one step further. Use those web-based tools. Don't make a decision based on what they tell you you're going to receive for 14. You really need to look at those tools, put numbers in there, put actual numbers that you believe the prices are going to be and what your yields are going to be. Make your decision based on those outcomes, not someone else's outcome, not what your neighbor said he or she was going to be doing. Take a hard look at those numbers, and when you use those web-based tools, put good, meaningful numbers in there, and that will help you get good results and help you make the right decision for your farming operation. So please go to visit your Farm Service Agency office, your county office, as soon as possible. I know there's been some press out there that says you need to wait till the last minute. Don't do that, please, because if you do, Mark's going to be back there, and he's going to be calling me saying, I have lines out the front door of every county office in Missouri, and we've got to do something about it. So get to your county office, sign up for the programs as soon as you possibly can. But again, it's very important for the future of your farming operation. Also coming up this year, the Secretary just appeared before Congress to talk about the status of the Farm Bill implementation and USDA's budget and where he believes that we're going to be headed through the next year. Many of the producers have already visited our Farm Service Agency county offices, and if you have, you've noticed the changes in the technology. Since 2007, we have been working on our modernization project called MIDAS. If you've been in the offices before, you've looked and seen that there are two entirely different systems. There's two screens. Our staff has to go back and forth between the two systems. Now, with the MIDAS program completed and the business partner just put in the last 60 days, now our staff can go in and look at a single screen and not have to go back and forth between the different technologies, and we believe this will rapidly speed up enrollment and sign up for our programs. There's still more to come, but this is a long way from where we have been in the past using the technology. In the future, we're going to look at ways that we can do crop reporting. We have a pilot program. I want to thank Congress for giving us funding to do a pilot program for the Accuracy program, which is the Acreage Crop Reporting Streamlining Initiative. We have pilots going on in Illinois and Iowa this year to explore how we can allow our producers to do one-stop crop reporting, so you don't have to do your crop reports at your crop insurance agent as well as the FSA office. And then I want to take that to the next level. I want those that are using precision agricultural equipment to be able to do the downloads from the planting equipment and from the combines directly into an FSA office. And that's part of what this pilot is going to be looking at. We have many farmers out there and ranchers that are using the technology, so let's modernize FSA so that we can help them do an even better job. We want to look at how we're going to support the next generation of farmers and ranchers. The age keeps increasing. I was with it for a while and then I passed it, unfortunately, to age 58. Since 2009, we've issued 99,000 direct and guaranteed operating and ownership loans to beginning farmers and ranchers. And the coming two-year anniversary of FSA's microloan program, we've issued more than 9,563 microloans, totaling $186 million. 70% of those are to beginning farmers. This is a program that we actually started at USDA, lending $30,000 to those that want to get involved in agriculture for all different types of uses with minimal amounts of paperwork. It was so successful, and fortunately, Congress recognized the success of this. So in the Farm Bill, Congress increased the amount of money that we could loan through the microloan program from $30,000 to $50,000. So we want to thank the Congress for allowing us to take and expand a very, very successful program. Next issue I want to discuss is agriculture trade, and this is something that I think is extremely important for everyone in this room and all across the country. Our American farmers and ranchers are the very best farmers and ranchers to be found anywhere in the world. Make no mistake about it. You all are, without a doubt, the very best. When I travel around the world, the one thing that is recognized is the quality of U.S. products. Everybody wants to buy U.S. products. You're recognized as having the very best quality and the very best value. But there's a lot of competition out there, and there's a lot of people out there that are trying to get in our markets. With the production increases that we've been experiencing, we need to increase those foreign markets for the products that we are growing here in the United States. We are in the biggest boom for U.S. agricultural farm exports that we have ever experienced. We just completed another record year in agriculture trade last year. $152.5 billion in agricultural trade. That surpassed the previous record of $149 billion, which was achieved just the year before that. We have just concluded the biggest 6 years in agricultural trade in the history of this nation. And I think The reason behind all of that, again, is because everyone recognizes the quality of products that you all are producing. Great quality, they're safe, and they're priced competitively. This past year, we saw export growth in most of our top markets, Canada, Mexico, Japan, EU, and South Korea, and a number of our major commodities, soybeans, corn, beef, and pork, saw double-digit growth percentages. Think about that. Those commodities we saw double-digit growth in. But as good as that news is, there's still an awful lot of work to be done. And let me make this statement right now up front before we go any further. What happens in 2015 is going to shape the future of agriculture. And it's going to shape the future of all of our producers. This coming year will be one of the most important years for agriculture when it comes to trade that we're ever going to have an opportunity to have. We're in the midst of two of the largest negotiations for trade that we have ever attempted in history. To bring those to a conclusion, we need Congress to give the President trade promotion authority. Every president since FDR has had trade promotion authority. And right now, our negotiators are at a disadvantage because they do not have trade promotion authority. And the reason why this is so important, those countries that we're negotiating with, they know that at the end of the day, with trade promotion authority, that Congress is going to vote it up or down without any changes. And that makes a big difference in how you're going to walk into a negotiation, knowing that at the end of the day, whatever you come up with, it's going to get an up and down vote. So we need Congress to give the President trade promotion authority to give our negotiators a little bit of additional leverage. As far as our negotiators go, I know Ambassador Froman is very much engaged and a good negotiator and very tough. But that other negotiator that's with him, Ambassador Darcy Vetter, she was my deputy for several years at the Department of Agriculture. She was the deputy undersecretary in charge of Foreign Agricultural Service. She's tough. And she's a farm girl from Nebraska. So let me tell you something. When it comes to agriculture, she knows her stuff, and she's going to get the very best deals that she can for agriculture across the board. But we need to give them the tools necessary to get this done. One of the deals that we're working on is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or we call it TPP. We're clearly all better off with this deal than without it. And let me say this up front. We need to bring this one home. If we don't, there are other countries out there today that are trying to do their own free trade agreements with these other countries. And if they get their deals done before we bring this home, it puts all of American agriculture at a major disadvantage. So we need to get this one completed as quickly as we possibly can. This will expand demand for U.S. agricultural products by 480 million additional customers in our TPP partner countries. That's real. In addition to cutting the tariffs, the TPP will include strong sanitary and phytosanitary provisions. Some of the issues that we're facing now and some of the barriers will be broken down. The commitments would promote strong regulatory disciplines that would improve transparency and help foster science-based decision-making. One of the major issues that we're facing now are non-science-based restrictions. And we need these deals so that now we can base everything on sound science, not political whims. The TPP represents a once-in-a-lifetime chance to assure access to some of the world's most important markets. And again, if we don't grab this opportunity now, we are going to fall further behind our competitors. And there's some pretty good competitors out there that want these markets. The other trade agreement that the president announced a little over a year ago was the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP as we like to call it. Now, things are not as far as long as this one. It's just started again this past year. There has been a change in the negotiators because there was a change in the ministers or the director generals at the EU. So there's been a change in the negotiating team. We hope that that change will be a positive one, with new people coming in with new ideas and new thoughts from the EU, so that we can move the ball along on this. But it's going to be extremely difficult. The EU's new Ag Commissioner, Paul Hogan from Ireland, will be speaking at USDA's Outlook Forum this week, in fact, on Thursday. He'll also spend a great deal of time talking with Secretary Vilsack one-on-one, as well as many of our industry leaders. Now, I'm not going to kid any of you in this room. Doing a trade deal with the EU is going to be extremely difficult. There's a list of issues that we have with the EU that if I started on that list, I would be here till dinner time tonight. But it's going to be difficult. There's a list of over 400 geographical indicators that they got Central America to agree to. And I don't see us agreeing to any of their geographical indicators. They do not like biotechnology at all, and that's going to be a major hurdle in itself. They don't like the way that we do pathogen reduction in our meats in the United States. And personally, I got a problem with that. I think we got the safest meat supply in the world. So why would you have a problem with how we do our pathogen reduction? And that list goes on and on and on. But again, I think that with trade being stalled in the European Union now for several years, it has not grown at the same rate as our trade with most other countries. We need to attempt something to again, get our trade going in the European Union, break down those non-science-based barriers that our products are currently facing. So this, again, is another critical trade agreement that we desperately need to work very hard on, and hopefully at the end of the day convince the EU that the way we do things here in this country is the right way, and it's the way that most of our trading partners has accepted. You know, I focused on that, we like to call it the alphabet soup at USDA. Everything at USDA is alphabet soup, and you know, it just gets crazy. But TPA, TPP, TTIP, let me mention that in addition to our work towards these agreements, we do work very hard to monitor and enforce the agreements that we already have in place. We remain very much engaged with China. China is our number one trading partner. About $25 billion worth of agricultural products a year go to China. If you look at just one example, and I know you grow a lot of soybeans here in Missouri, 50% of all the soybeans grown in the United States are exported. 25% of all the soybeans grown in the United States are exported to one country, China. One in every four rows of soybeans that's grown is exported to China. But we may face many barriers. We have to break down those sanitary and phytosanitary and technical barriers that we are currently facing. We are also watching our other trading partners and the global trade situation, hopefully to avoid markets, keep markets open, and find out where markets we believe may be closed and work towards keeping them open. Right now we have a situation with high path avian influenza on the West Coast. Unfortunately, because of that, we have experienced some of the markets being closed to U.S. poultry. In California, that's an issue for two reasons. One, because one of the detections was in California, but two, most of our poultry products that are going to Asia and that part of the world go through the West Coast ports, and you can't ship product through the West Coast ports if California is shut down, and Oregon and the state of Washington. Which leads me to the other situation that we're currently facing. We have a slowdown in our West Coast ports because of instances of labor that we are currently working on. There's some contract negotiations that are taking place now. Hopefully, they will be wrapped up in the very near future so that we can open up all of those West Coast ports and get the rest of our agricultural products that are sitting there and some waiting to be imported, unloaded and unloaded. So we do have a situation out there that I know that we are all monitoring very closely. As many of you know, as Dr. Elliott pointed out, I do trade missions. I try to do two trade missions a year. I'll be doing a trade mission coming up in March to Malaysia and to the Philippines. Both are pretty good markets for U.S. products, so we're looking at increasing the amount of products that we're shipping to both of those countries. So I'll be going to both of those countries. We have about 25 U.S. companies that will be accompanying me on those missions. We have about five State Departments of Agriculture that will be joining me on those trade missions. Then in June, I will be doing another trade mission to Panama and to the Dominican Republic. We think, again, that there's great opportunities there for us in both of those markets for our U.S. companies. Most of those companies are companies that are small companies that are owned by women, by minorities, as well as some veterans. So these trade missions are a real opportunity to take some of our smaller companies, some of our diverse companies, and get them started in some of these foreign markets. We expect the strong economic growth to continue throughout Southeast Asia. That region holds significant untapped market potential for our U.S. exporters. And again, we're looking at expanding those existing markets in Malaysia and the Philippines. Let me wrap up by stating what I stated earlier in this. I want to repeat it because I think this is extremely important that everyone understand this. What happens on trade in 2015 is in fact going to shape the future of agriculture. We get these trade agreements done, we get trade promotion authority, we break down the barriers that we're currently facing in many of these countries. We're going to be able to continue to expand those markets so that they can enjoy the very best products that any farmer or rancher anywhere in the world grows. So it is important that we bring home the TPP, we get trade promotion authority, and we break down some of the barriers that we're facing in some of these other countries. With that done, I don't see a limit as to what we can do and what we can export in the future. So thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. You want me to take Q&A for a few minutes? I appreciate the opportunity for you to be here today, and thank you very much for the invitation. I've enjoyed it, and I've met most of you when you came through the door, so thank you. Again, thanks for the invitation. Questions? And I'll take the easy ones, and I'll let Director Fortes take the hard ones. Agreed, Richard?
Sure.
Questions, comments?
What's the country in this TPP agreement? What countries in this TPP?
There's a total of 12 countries, most of them in the Pacific Rim, but they also include Canada and Mexico. Yes.
You talked about U.S. or China's ban on U.S. poultry. You said poultry is a huge industry. How does the
It will have an impact, but if you look at the demand worldwide for poultry and the growth for the exports, the poultry industry in the last year has seen some tremendous growth in their exports, again, double-digit growth in exports. And if you look at the prices for poultry today versus 2-3 years ago, the poultry market is very strong. So hopefully the ban will not be a long one. But if you look at the other major markets, my bigger concern is the ports and not being able to ship product through California to the ports to get it to some of the other countries. Other questions? Comments? Yes?
How are the trade agreements working with China, specifically the pork, beef, and rice, you think are really important to Missouri? Get some more things open up there.
We continue to, it's been very, very difficult. Those that have accompanied me on some of my visits to China can tell you that we work very, very hard to work to open some of those markets. I had representatives from the rice industry travel with me last spring because I did a trade mission last May to China. We're using emerging market program money to do studies on some of those markets and outside of the tier one, looking at the tier two cities to see what the demand for that is. We continue to work with the Chinese government to get our certificates for rice approved so that we can get rice into China. Beef is another issue. We've been very much engaged in beef now for a number of years. Our beef market to China has been closed since the BSE, the first BSE cow here in the United States. I believe that was 2003. So we haven't been able to open up that market. Most all of our other markets are now open. China, I think, is about the only one that remains closed to our beef exports. But we worked very, very hard. We had a team over there in December that worked pretty much nonstop for 10 days. We thought that we were going to be able to get a deal done then. But unfortunately, the talks collapsed right at the very end. And I'll be perfectly honest why they collapsed. They wanted us to be able to do animal ID back to the farm level, something that the industry itself has fought now for a number of years. And because we couldn't do animal ID back to the farm, we weren't able to conclude that deal. Which, again, I think we put offers on the table that I think would give them the protections other than that, but they were rejected. In fact, I think what we put on the table was even better than animal ID back to the farm. Yes?
Do you think that our problem with our port on the West Coast will cause issues with trading partners in the future when they look at that issue and they think that maybe we're not extremely reliable in terms of exporting because of these problems that may arise in the future?
No, I don't think that it'll have any long-term consequences. Hopefully we'll be able to get this, the labor unions and the port authorities will be able to come to an agreement in the very near future, and once that happens, they're going to move a lot of product in a short period of time. The United States is known as a reliable supplier. We're one of the most reliable suppliers to be found anywhere in the world. And I don't care what it is, we are able to get the product moved and get it to other countries on time. Some product are looking, I know that looking at other ways to move product into the export market, but I don't think it'll have any long-term impact. Short-term, yes, it will, but long-term, I don't think so, because we are recognized as being a very reliable supplier. Yes? Well, it already has. It's had an impact on some of the countries in Africa. It's had an impact on some of our smaller markets. Unfortunately, we have some countries because of the EU and what they started doing 20 years ago by calling biotechnology Frankenfood. I guess some of you are too young in the room to remember that, aren't you? But, you know, and that was very unfortunate. But it is having an impact. As I stated to the group this morning, we, agriculture, needs to change the way that we are talking about biotechnology. We need to be talking about biotechnology for what it does for the environment, okay? And I'll use the same example I used this morning with the group. I used to run the corn planter and the spray rig on the farm, and until I started putting suit on. We put a chemical down, most of you know, we put counter down the row. I used one of the pyrethrins over the top when I sprayed the corn with the herbicide. And then when corn was chest high, I come back and sprayed it again for corn borer. Wiped out every insect, every good worm. I wiped out everything in the field with those three applications. There wasn't a healthy bug left out there. Today, this is how many I use. None. When I had my own custom spraying business when I was 19 years old, I used gallons of product to the acre on a soybean field. Today we use ounces. You look at what they're developing now, biotechnology with corn that is being grown using less water. I think that's good for the environment, and that's going to continue. If you look, now we need to look at the human health aspects of biotechnology. We got soybeans, high oleic oil, healthier than anything else you can get. We've got a golden rice out there that if we could get it consumed by those in the countries that have the vitamin deficiency, it would save lives, millions of lives. So, I mean, and we're going to keep developing products that are going to improve the environment, or allow us to improve the environment, and also allow us to improve human health. That's how we need to start talking about biotechnology. The other thing that we need to do is we need to stop fighting among ourselves. We don't need traditional agriculture, organic agriculture, and those that are in between pointing fingers at each other, saying you're not good, you're not healthy, you can't compete. There's enough markets out there for all of us, and we need to be working together. Look, ladies and gentlemen, there is a far, far bigger battle out there that we have to fight. And we don't need to be fighting among ourselves. We need to be telling our consumers our message. They have the most abundant, safest, cost-effective food supply to be found in the world. In fact, in the United States, you now have, of the developed world, our consumers are spending less of their income on food than any other country in the developed world today. That's the message that we need to be getting out to the 99% that are the consumers. So that was a long answer to your question, but I was glad you asked that question. Anything else? Yes, sir.
You said that the sign-up on the dairy bill was 50%. Approximately how much milk did that represent?
I don't have that figure. I'm sorry, I don't have that figure. I don't have it. I don't have it off the top of my head. But it was 50% of the dairies. If you look at 87% of the dairies in the United States are less than 200 cows. But I do know that a lot of our larger dairies did sign up for the MPP program. Did you sign up?
Yes, sir.
Good. That's great. If somebody didn't sign up, I'd like to know why. But nobody can tell me why they didn't sign up. I haven't met anybody yet that didn't sign up. But for $100, you were going to get an increase in your production for 16. If nothing else, you're going to get an increase in your production for 16. So, yes, sir.
Would it have been that there's a lot of the Amish around that represent, like we've got an awful lot of Amish around the Seymour area, and you know, they don't produce much milk, but they won't sign up either. So.
Yeah. That could be. I'm glad you pointed it out, and I should have realized that because I have an Amish community in Delaware, so I should have realized that. I'll see if we can get those numbers.
Thank you.
Now I'm really curious after you said that. Other questions or comments?
You talk about what's at stake in your upcoming Russia trip.
I'm not going to Russia. That was the last trip that we went on. Yeah, Anson put the last trip that we were up on. That trip ended up being one of our more successful trade missions, believe it or not. We wouldn't be able to do it today. But that the Russia trade mission ended up being, dollar-wise product sold, one of our more successful trade missions. It was a very interesting trip. We met with some good people. We visited a ranch there that I think they had, if memory serves me correctly, about, John, what was it, 30,000 head of Black Angus imported from the United States. So it was very, very interesting. But they recognized our genetics here. Even the dairy industry recognizes their genetics and will import Holstein from the United States. Yes, sir.
Are you confident then that the programs and processes we've got in place now, and I read they just found another BSE cow in Canada, will that be a non-event for the protocols we've got in place now?
Yeah, I think most countries recognize the fact that we go through a great deal of testing and the protocols that we have in place to protect our consumers, but they don't only protect our consumers, but they also protect our trading partners. I think now it's pretty much a non-event because of what we do have in place, what Canada has in place, again, to do the testing, to make sure that we protect our consumers and our trading partners. So I don't, and I could be wrong, but I don't think it'll have a major impact on trade. Other questions or comments? If not, again, I want to thank MSU for the opportunity to be here and to talk to all of you. I hope it wasn't as boring as Dr. Elliott and my good friend in the back said it was going to be. But again, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's been a pleasure getting to meet and talk with all of you. So thank you.